Hello, this is Frank Shines, and I'm joined today by
Umar Qureshi.
Umar Qureshi assisted me in researching the book along with my brother Grandison. He also played an important role in the research that was done by Michelle Shines in the foreword. So Umar's joining us from the Middle East. I'm here in the U.S. in Florida. The day is November the 5th, 2020. We're going to give you an overview of the new book, Let In But Left Out. It's my third book. I was originally published when I was working with IBM by John Wiley and Sons, and then published another book called The New Science of Success. And this is the third, Let In But Left Out, Leadership, Faith, and Knowledge in the Age of AI, Coronavirus, and Fake News. And the essence of the book is really about the fact that I was writing this book and completing the last couple of chapters when March 11th hit and the World Health Organization announced that coronavirus had become a global pandemic. So immediately I contacted my agent, one of the publishers I was working with in Colorado, and one of my book coaches, and they all basically told me the same thing: you gotta rewrite the whole book. With that in mind, it's been rewritten from the perspective of the original thesis, which was to look at what happens with the U.S. should we have another crisis in an age of extreme polarization, this isolationism that has happened, where we're no longer on the global stage, and we have AI-powered fake news and technology that's overwhelming our people, increasing the rate at which we have income inequality and wealth inequality across the nation, which is eroding our middle class. Those things are all moving together. Once the pandemic hit, I had to rewrite the entire book from the perspective of not what might happen should we have a crisis, but now we are living and breathing that crisis with coronavirus. So with that in mind, let's give you a quick overview of the book. The book is divided into three sections. One, a call for reflection. Two, a call for balance. And three, a call for action. I'll just briefly touch on the key chapters within each of those sections and close for now. In call for action, there are five chapters. We'll focus on the first two in this particular slide: situational awareness, cognitive bias, and the COVID-19 hoax. I'm a former Air Force officer who learned to fly planes at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, and then later at undergraduate pilot training in Williams Air Force Base outside of Phoenix, Arizona. One of the first things you learn when flying a plane is get your head out of the cockpit, which means don't focus or overly focus, I should say, on the cockpit instruments and gauges and dials, because the real world is happening outside of the plane. And you have to constantly be aware of other planes and where you are in the airspace, in a three-dimensional airspace. Otherwise, lots of things can go wrong, not least of which is a potential mid-air collision. That's known as situational awareness. Always being aware of your surroundings at all times in three dimensions of space, as flying on the ground when you're overseas, involved in a war, when you're speaking in front of Congress or senators, or perhaps at a military base, unit of military soldiers or airmen that you might be leading. It's always being aware of the situation that you're involved in, and being sure that you don't get manipulated by the media and other sources as well. So situational awareness is one of the key things that we learn in the military. And that same type of awareness is critical today. We need to be aware of ourselves, even from the perspective of COVID, social distancing, right? Being aware if someone sneezes, if someone coughs nearby, being aware of your surroundings in terms of whether or not someone's wearing a mask, or if perhaps there's proper ventilation in the room that you're in, that you're getting proper ventilation or fresh air moving through the room. Situational awareness also means, if you're walking around in an unsafe neighborhood, constantly being aware of your surroundings. It means that if you're in a situation where perhaps you're online and trolls are following you, or you're being bullied, or your kids are being bullied, how do you teach them situational awareness? We put our heads into a smartphone, and about 30%, nearly 30% of children that they follow walking across the street in all sorts of neighborhoods around the country, they find that those kids lose situational awareness, which leads to potential accidents because they're looking into their smartphone instead of watching and looking what's happening around them. There have been accidents, there have been people killed because they've got their head in their smartphones and are unaware of what's going on. The mother, the father, whose seven-year-old daughter, they spend less time looking in the eyes of that child than they do looking into their smartphone. So again, get your head out of the cockpit also means get your head out of the smartphone. Be there, be here now with people. That's what we mean around the situational awareness. The natural extension of situational awareness, whether as a pilot from my perspective or as an average American or average citizen of any country, is around this sense of cognitive bias. Cognitive bias can lead to a COVID-19 hoax, which we'll talk more about in future recordings, but hopefully you'll have an opportunity to read the book and see some of the details yourself. But we talk about the different cognitive biases that we all have. When we're flying in a cockpit, it's easy because of your, what's known as your lying mind, right? Cognitive bias has been referred to as your lying mind. It's kind of the way our brains as human beings are naturally wired to not necessarily see reality all the time. When you're flying a plane, if you have input signals, you can become disoriented. If you happen to see the horizon and you think it's oriented one way, and that conflicts with kind of your sense of balance based upon your ears and the way you think you're tilting, going up, going down, sideways in an airplane, you have what's known as spatial disorientation. That same type of spatial disorientation in a cockpit is now impacting us in terms of fake news and not knowing what's truth, what's reality, what's virtual, what's real, what's fake news, what's evidence and data. And so America is kind of going through its own sense of spatial disorientation. In the last three chapters of Call for Reflection, as part of this reflection, we say, take the time, understand your situation. Take the time, understand that you can have senses that don't necessarily tell you the truth, fake news that's not necessarily correct. We also talk about reflecting back and looking at our history, our familial history, our American history. That history provides us clues. It provides us motivation. It provides us historical context. And so we spend some time talking about call for reflection. And in this particular case, what I've done is rather than using the names and examples of purely known historical figures, I incorporate the names of family members going back to the Revolutionary War with the Baldukes and McGees of Ireland and the French Canadian Native American Indians. That's part of my family, as well as the first Africans who came over in the 1690s from the Ghana, Western region of Africa, to the point where Reverend Cady Stroud, my great-grandfather, whose siblings were slaves, he happened to be born a few years after President Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. So consequently, Reverend Cady Stroud was considered a freedman, even though his older brothers and sisters were considered slaves. And his mom was an African slave. He was half Tawakonian Indian and British. because of the slave owner married a Tawakonian Indian. That Tawakonian Indian and this particular case, it was Mandred Stroud, the slave owner. They had a child, Louise Stroud, who was mixed race. And Katie Stroud was the son of the mixed race Louise Stroud, who was the son of the slave owner plantation in Texas. Katie Stroud, at age 19, moved to Oklahoma with his mixed race father in order to escape racism and the carpetbagger tax laws of Texas. And essentially they moved to a different nation, right? The Indian Territory at that time was not yet Oklahoma. So it was kind of considered a different country, and it allowed them to live more freely in the Indian Territory, which is where he met his wife, my great grandmother, who was a Creek Native American Indian. Her sister, Jenny McGee, is shown in the lower left here. And they ultimately moved from Oklahoma to Colorado. They had 11 children, and those 11 children became pioneers throughout America. You'll see the Colorado College that's named after my great uncle, Dolphus, who was Olympic contender, and my aunt, great aunt, Effie. Both of them graduated from Colorado College in 1931, and they were followed by 9 of their other brothers and sisters who went on to have a lot of great successes, to include drafting, writing the control system formula that allowed us to have the Apollo missions work for returning astronauts from space to Earth. Those achievements have been something I've looked back upon in high regard and used it as a basis for my own Olympic dreams. And when I graduated from the Air Force Academy, also there in Colorado Springs, where my great-grandfather and my mother were born, that passion, that interest, that inspiration from our family, and parlayed that into a career working first in the military as an Air Force officer, and later at IBM and Ernst & Young. So here in this call for reflection, we ask everyone, you know, if we can survive, right? Racism, slavery, the 1960s, obviously we go back, the 1918 pandemic, World War I, World War II, Great Depression, all these sorts of things. If my family and many families like yours can survive that, we can certainly survive COVID-19. Next, the section on call for balance. Balance here, we're talking about where America may have led in technology disruption, but we left out people transition. We let in inequality, but we left out upward mobility. We let in the coronavirus, and we left out the bioscience. So what we're not suggesting is that the world just suddenly stop and forget about automation and globalization and competition and artificial intelligence and all these new technologies. We can't avoid those things. However, we can do something similar to what this nation has done in the past. During times of transition, such as World War II, we put in place the post-World War II GI Bill that made it possible for our soldiers to come back and transition into the civilian world. We can do similar things with coronavirus. We can also look back and understand that there's a lot of science we didn't know about the 1918 Spanish flu, but we learned a lot of lessons from that, from books, newspapers, and things of the time, but yet we didn't take those lessons learned and apply evidence and data and bioscience in 2020 to offset the risks associated with coronavirus or COVID-19. So a big part of what we discuss here is, as human beings, We'll have to learn to work with data, work with science, work with each other, and work with robots and artificial intelligence, and make all of those things partners, not enemies. And only by doing that and having that balance can we achieve success. Finally, the section on call for action. Given my background, 11 years as an active duty military person, another 5 years reserve, that's where I really learned a lot of leadership in sports prior to going to the Air Force Academy and going into the Air Force. And then those years as a military leader in the US Air Force. So we can draw upon lessons learned, and we provide a chapter called Fault Leadership, in which we talk about the Apollo 13 mission and that crisis and how we almost lost our astronauts. And we use that as a metaphor for understanding how America or any organization or individual, family, business leader, president, can use this fault leadership approach to managing through a crisis and leaving no people behind, as well as leaving no vets behind, which is a great segue to a special section that I've included, a chapter on helping military move through this job transition as they leave the military and go into the civilian world. And we conclude with some very specific actions that all of us can take in terms of getting off your butt. With that overview, a call for reflection, thinking about our past, thinking about our history, thinking about the great men and women who preceded us. Let's protect this democracy. Let's protect free market capitalism. We may have to rethink, reimagine some of these things for a new world in which we no longer live in just a physical environment, but we now live in a virtual and digital environment, call it a digital environment. How do we redesign these things for the new digital physical world? Thinking about reflection, how do we make sure that we have the proper balance and learn to work together and understand many of these things are not just binary. It's not a matter of coronavirus or the economy. It's let's make sure that we shut down coronavirus so we can open the economy. It's not a matter of technology versus people. It's how do we prepare people for the technology transition? That's the section on balance. And finally, on call for action, let's get out there and let's march. Let's take action. Thank you. This has been Frank Shines. I've been joined by Umar Qureshi. The book again is Let In But Left Out, Leadership, Faith and Knowledge in the Age of AI, Coronavirus and Fake News. Thank you for your time.